6.5% was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and if you look at the round by round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris, she's Anna. And that's right, this podcast is brought to you by the two of us. Anna, however, is known as the brains of the show, and some of the reasons why she's still around, why she keeps me, I haven't a clue. Maybe it's because I have the ability to do a pretty solid introduction, in my opinion, and the occasional solid segue. But welcome, Anna.
Thanks, Chris. Yeah, it's fully true that your ability to segue is just unparalleled, I'd say. You are the Quinn Hughes of segues.
That's high praise. It's better than being like Tyler Myers of segues.
Oh, Tyler Myers of anything, unless it's like being tall. Yeah. I don't know how much I'm going to be the brains of the operation this week. I'm a little brain dead after moving my office all weekend. Not physically moving, I should say. I moved a few bits of furniture, but...
Yeah, it's like you could read my mind because I was going to immediately say you physically moved it on your back. So
yeah, like, I mean, anyone who's met me, I'm a tiny, tiny lady, so that wouldn't work out too well.
Tiny but tough.
Thanks.
Though you're welcome.
She is little, she... Yeah, she is
big. Oh, well, speaking of tiny but tough, not the Canucks. They are tough, but not tiny whatsoever. Well, okay, Connor is, true. He's like the tiniest. How tall do you think he is? Because, like, the Vancouver Canucks...
He's listed as 5'10", but that I think... But apparently he said in interviews that he's between 5'7 and 5'8", so he's 5'7".
Okay. Yeah, that adds up. It's just
maybe 5'10 on skates.
Like... I'm 5'10", and I'm pretty sure I'm taller than Connor. Yeah, but no, the Vancouver Canucks have found themselves in a really good base going into the All-Star break. The week that was an interesting week that was. I mean, interesting in different ways, despite maybe not starting off entirely interesting. So we'll talk, obviously, about Vancouver. And unfortunately we got some tough things to talk about, later on in the show. And with that said, I do want to let all of our listeners know now that we do have a content warning coming up, as we will be discussing, a topic, in the F word, that pertains to sexual assault. So if you feel, that content is not, appropriate for whatever the situation that might be, please understand it is something we will get into. But there will be a segue that we will take that break. You'll hear the drop music. You will know, and we'll obviously remind you that's the case. We want to ensure that we treat the topic with the respect that it deserves. Before that, though, we got to rewind. With future Vancouver Canuck Connor Bedard currently nursing a broken jaw, he was not in town when the Blackhawks swung through. And while the Vancouver Canucks got a 2-0 win, I actually don't know anything about the game. I don't remember it being all that inspiring. It happened. I sort of described it to a friend of mine as being akin to the experience that I had when the Vancouver Canucks won game one of the 2011 series against the Nashville Predators. I mean, the Canucks won and the game happened, but I couldn't tell you for a second what transpired.
Right.
That game against Chicago on Monday.
Yeah, it was rough. And I did feel sorry for all the people that have paid hundreds of dollars for their ticket to go see Bedard. And they got that game instead. It did remind me of the day I flew into Chicago last in October. And there was just so many people wearing, sad looking people wearing Argentina shirts. And I realized... Messi was meant to come to town that night. He was injured, so he did not. So people had paid hundreds of dollars.
Okay, off the rails moment here.
We've got to talk about Messi.
Yeah, the Major League Soccer schedule was released, and in it, Inter Miami, Messi's team, was going to be coming here to Vancouver to play the Vancouver Whitecaps, or is coming. I mean, it's happening, that match.
Don't scare people.
So, you know, obviously there's some hype around Lionel Messi, and as you described, many disappointed people in Chicago. But tickets went on sale over the past week for those that might be interested in checking out a Whitecaps match and Messi while he is in town, hopefully. I hadn't really paid much attention. I have my season tickets, so, like, I wasn't going to go buy more. I wasn't, you know, mine are bought, so, like, why would I care? And I finally decided to, like, check on it after a friend of the show, Jay, had said he had paid, like, over $100 and some odd face value per seat for the upper bowl. That's the other thing. They have over, like, 50 some odd thousand seats sold in BC Place for this match already. Mm. So I'm like, wow, that's a lot. Cause, like, my season ticket holder price for my seat is about, like, 20 some odd dollars. And I'm like, Annie, can attest.
Yeah. Really good seats.
Yeah.
Apart from almost when you're sat in front of Americans that are spewing transphobic hate.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't happen all the time.
No, they're very good seats.
So I was like, wow. So then I started looking at, like, what are the price of these seats? And the face value of, like, single seats in my section, we're talking, like, rows behind, are, like, over $300. And then those that have already entered resale are going for, like, $600 and $700 per seat. As you get to sort of, you know, midfield in the lower bowl, people are, like, pricing resale tickets at, like, $6,000, $7,000 per seat. It just blows my mind. And there's no guarantee he comes to Vancouver because, as some of you may know, but many may not, Vancouver has an artificial turf surface. And there have been many quality players who have elected not to come to Vancouver for a variety of reasons. Like, the one that always stood out for me was Thierry Henry.
Yeah,
I never had an opportunity to see him play in Vancouver because he never made the trip out, and he made it very clear.
Yeah, I literally bought tickets to a New York Red Bulls game when I was visiting Vancouver before I left here, because I was like, I know he's not coming, but if he does and I'm there and I'm not at the game, like, I would, you know, be so disappointed. So I had to go by myself just in case.
Yeah. I mean, I do want to qualify that by also saying there have been some very quality players who have come to Vancouver. You know, Ibrahimovic, Beckham in the early days. Keane was here. Trying to think. Cellini. I mean, there's been some very good players, but it's just...
It's a
lot of money for something that is not a guarantee. And I have to think that the Whitecaps have some form of knowledge that has them leaning towards Messi being here in Vancouver to price the tickets as such. Right. And again, this discounting any type of injury, knock on wood, like, that doesn't happen. But, you know, people do get hurt. But if he does not make the trip, if it's quite literally held out or doesn't come, oh, there'll be 50 some odd thousand unhappy people. I mean, we get to see Suarez, maybe.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, obviously, I've been incredibly lucky to grow up in Europe in terms of seeing football stars. I've never seen Messi live, but I've seen some incredible players live, including Henry many times. Mm-hmm. Many, many times. But yeah, like, to me, I'm just like, I know you're thinking it's a once in a lifetime shot to see him live, but, like, it's Messi in the MLS. Like, he doesn't even run anymore.
Yeah, I'm conflicted. I'll be very honest. There is a strong part of me that wonders if I shouldn't list my tickets and simply watch the match on TV. And that's, again, I'm passing up the opportunity to see Messi play, one of the greatest of all time that has ever, you know, kicked the ball around. Yet it's hard to ignore that the price that I could get for my seats could potentially pay for my entire season.
Yeah. I mean, and then some. And to transition back into Canucks, like, I was incredibly lucky to get to see the Sedins last home game for, like, less than $50 Canadian. I think it was 30 US plus fees because I bought it before the announcement on some resale site.
I can't, you know, one up the last game, but the game immediately after their announcement were tickets that I was given earlier in the season. Like, I was given tickets to a handful of games, and that week or the week prior, I was like, you know, my wife and I are going to go up to visit the in-laws. Maybe I should just give these tickets away and we can stay an extra night. And I hadn't gotten around to that. And then the announcement happens and I'm like, hell to no, we're going home. I'm there, right? I didn't have to pay for them. So I'm very gracious to the fact that they were provided to me, but oh my goodness. Like, again, it's luck in some respect. What wasn't lucky, again, back to the game itself, was the play. I mean, the Vancouver Canucks got an early goal from Suter, not even halfway through the first. Hughes scores. And Chicago really didn't amount to much more than simply a game in the way of St. Louis. There was no flow. Like, there wasn't anything that seemed to be
like, no,
it was, like, I don't know. I'm not trying. I feel like I'm discounting it, but like,
no, it wasn't good.
Getting
hockey.
Angry of a too many men on the ice penalty for the Vancouver Canucks.
I do think though, like, you know, I think it was mainly probably due to defensive lapses and stuff. But like, Thatcher Demko had to make some saves, right?
Yeah,
that wasn't like the easiest shutout he'll ever have, for sure. Yeah.
But regardless, Canucks get that win. That gets us into a game against the St. Louis Blues, a much different affair. One of the things about the Blues game that really struck me as interesting is how Vancouver comes out and decides that they want to be dominant. And despite that, find themselves down 2-0 at the end of the first. Like, at one point, I think the Blues had like one shot on net almost midway through the first, I want to say it was. And it was, again, when they got their first goal, it was, I want the second or third shot, I think it was.
Yeah, I think it was the second, I'm pretty sure, because I looked up at the giant screen, because I was at this game and sitting in the lower bowl for once, which, you know, I haven't done, I don't think, in like 5 years. Discounting maybe a Giants game, like one of their, I think their last teddy pet toss that they did in the Rog. But yeah, like, I remember looking up at the giant jumbotron and was like, it said one shot, and I was like, was that their first shot? But I think it was, hadn't counted the goal yet. So yeah, it was completely against the run of play, but at the same time, as the period went on, you were just like, okay, well, Canucks, well, they are throwing this away. They do not deserve anything at this point.
Yeah. excuse me. I didn't mean to cough into the microphone there. The thing that I think was difficult from a sort of a goaltender perspective, like DeSmith was in net, was he wasn't seeing any action, but then the few opportunities that the Blues got were top tier. Like, it wasn't like he got a warm-up shot here or there. The Canucks were providing the Blues an opportunity to take advantage, while equally, you know, making the opposing goaltender look like they're the next coming of Patrick Waugh. It was not Binnington in net. It was Hofer. And it felt like after that first period that the Vancouver Canucks were going to lose a game because they were one up against a goaltender that suddenly got hot. I mean, I say suddenly, I actually don't know. Maybe he's been hot all along, and but somehow the Blues haven't benefited from it.
He played super well. I wrote a joke into the rundown about it, but it only really works written down, but that Hofer was playing like a Hall of Famer.
Hofer. Yeah.
Anyway.
I see what you're trying to do.
This may be my natural goalie bias, but yeah, I thought he played really really well. My friend, who doesn't know a lot about hockey, was kind of sad they didn't get the opportunity to boo Jordan Binnington.
No, that's too bad.
But yeah, no, he
it's played... a real treat when you can.
Yeah, play too well, and obviously that second line, you know, Pia Suda, like.
Well, I mean, so
the second line that wasn't the second line, right? Like he, when you put a second liner on the first line, huh?
Yeah, Pia Suter. So first of all, Canucks had three goals. He scored all three of them. How many hats hit the ice, Anna?
So when it first happened, two were thrown. One made it to the Canucks bench, and JT Miller chucked it back.
Wait, he threw the hat back into the crowd?
Yeah. I think.
Okay, I didn't hear that.
I don't know if it made it onto the hat trick. Broadcast, but like, yeah, there was confusion that it was whether it was a hat trick or not. And I think the Canucks were like, when JT chucked it back, it was like, no, we have how many seconds left? Do not. Like, we need to just get on with this, try and concentrate almost. But yeah, and then it was finally announced, and then the hats came down. But it was sad. Yeah. Initially.
Well, the Vancouver Canucks had a phenomenal third period. The second period was actually all Canucks, but the thing about it was Ofer was standing on his head. Canucks couldn't get anything by him. So Pia Suter gets himself his goal in the third period. That starts things to turn. You'd think the Vancouver Canucks would take that momentum and run with it. No, they let St. Louis score a goal less than a minute later to get that two-goal lead back. Thankfully, there's, you know, no ability to truly stop Pia Suter. You can only hope to contain him. And contain him, the Blues did not. He scores a power play marker. 5 minutes 42. That makes it interesting. You now have a one goal game, and the Canucks continued to do the whole let's throw everything that we can, including the kitchen sink, at the net, and hopefully something will work out. Unfortunately, it did not happen until late in the third period. 1908, and actually, I'm thinking back, had they pulled the goaltender at that point?
Yes.
They had, okay. Because I was just looking at NHL.com and it's not noted as an empty netter. So it had me wondering who might have been on the ice at the time.
Oh.
Because the goal was scored Suter from Miller and Hughes. And
yeah, I was there. I promise you I was there. But I thought the goalie was pulled. I remember it being a late pull, but they did it.
Yeah. It's interesting, like the event summary doesn't even show the time on ice for the goaltenders off of NHL.com. Like, so it's interesting that, you know, something that would normally be present isn't. Let's see, DeSmith, 51-12-5.
Oh, yeah, and I just remembered that I should be looking for DeSmith's number, not...
Yeah, DeSmith. So what's interesting here is, so DeSmith had 60 minutes, 41 seconds in net for a game that went well into overtime, or well enough. He must have been pulled because, Hofer had 61-54. I don't recall the Canucks having an extended amount of time where he wasn't on the ice on an upcoming penalty in that game.
I'm just reading game summary here. He's not on the ice list. So, yes, there are six players on the ice.
Okay. Well, regardless, takes the goal game into overtime. The Vancouver Canucks come out hot in overtime. What's interesting is that, like it or hate it, officiating kind of played an impact into what transpired in overtime. Post game, St. Louis's coach complained that the Vancouver Canucks fall down easy.
Right.
And when you watch the goal they score in overtime, Petey is going back hard on the forecheck and goes to set up shop in front of the Canucks net. He gets pushed or cross-checked. But puck's nowhere near him. Any other time of the game, especially where it then results in the potential of a goal scoring opportunity that gets called. So the fact that that doesn't get called in overtime blows my mind, but not only does it not get called, Petey's now providing a screen.
Yeah.
So like there's many different ways to look at it.
Just when you can literally have a very obvious comparison in the same game of the disallow goal, right? Like, that's the exact same thing had happened. Yeah, so you would think, like, according to that group of officials, they know what cross-checking is, and that's it.
Well, like, cross-checking or interference.
And yeah, either one.
I look at it this way. Let's say that puck is saved. In my mind, maybe there's no call, right? Like I could, you don't want to impact overtime, but where it results in a direct goal scoring opportunity, and you've already set the tone earlier. Like this is where, the game management, let the boys, settle it on the ice comes and like, okay, well that you're just introducing inconsistency for the sake of inconsistency.
Yeah. And like, that's obviously not consistent. You are deciding the game by doing that, by not calling things. And I've heard people say, oh, that's not going to get called in overtime, or you think that's getting called in the playoffs, what are Canucks going to do then? I mean, one, it's not the playoffs. Like, we can't start practicing for the playoffs in January. Like, that's
sure you can. Every game's a playoff game, Anna.
Yeah, so tight, like almost like a playoff game. To me, that's insanity. Like, we've talked about it. Like, I do think you can let stuff go. In an ideal world, yes, I think the officiating should be looser in the playoffs. I don't trust the group of officials that we have in hockey to do that in a responsible way. So, but to be realistic, yes, you can expect looser officiating in the playoffs, but like, it's a regular season game. It's January. You called that cross-checking once. Like, call it.
Yeah. Regardless, Blues score. They take the 2 points. Canucks get a loser point. And that brings us to the final game before the All-Star break against the Columbus Blue Jackets.
Can we, we go back and just talk about, like, I feel like it might be a good point to talk about Tocchet's post-game comments.
Oh, I didn't hear his post-game comments.
Oh, about Pettersson? So, like this was reported, and to be fair to the reporters, everyone in the room reported it accurately, reported it in context, and said, this might read as quite harsh. It didn't come out as that way, but like, Tocchet was asked about Pettersson and his performance and like whether he'd had a good game. Basically implying he hadn't. I mean, on the one hand, sure, like, we like an honest coach, but on the other hand, you demoted him. Like, what did you expect? But, he said that he hadn't liked Pedersen's game for the last three or so games. Hmm. And I think, and then the rest of the quote is he needs to skate more. But that was in response to another question. So, of like, what do you think he needs to do? So, Tocchet's always been honest. It's something we've admired from him from the start. And he did say the next day, after saying, oh, there was some sensationalist articles written about his quote, maybe I have to start being more guarded. And it turns out the only sensationalist headline was written by Sportsnet, so...
Yeah.
That's your business.
Is essentially, house radio, house broadcast, house print, whatever you want to call it.
So I don't know. I'm like just all for reporters. Reporters, I think, have been super responsible in what they've done.
Yeah.
And Tocchet didn't say anything especially wrong.
No, there's an ongoing narrative in hockey about the love-hate relationship with media and how media is sensationalist. And yet, hockey, for all intents and purposes, makes that happen because of how cliche they are. So at any point you go off that cliche script, you've given an opportunity for media to go and share something that we don't see at all. And so therefore it plays. That's not to suggest the message is manipulated.
No.
It's not. It's just that, you know, you can't be upset that when you say something that it accurately gets shared.
Yeah.
In print, on broadcast, on radio.
Yeah, I 100% agree with you. And I do know it's a bit of a vicious circle that, like, yeah, hockey's so boring that we get interested when a quote, like, an interesting quote comes, and then some people say, yeah, this is why we don't say anything. It's like, no, like, it's not a bad thing to have interest. It does not always
be less
a scandal.
Boring.
Yeah.
That when you are less boring, then that's what's normal.
Yeah. Engagement right? is like, there might be some bad reaction, but like engagement in general is like a good thing. It's a,
yeah. But it's sort of the backwards way that hockey and really the NHL thinks. Like, they still think they're top dog in some way, shape, or form. In Canada, okay. But even then, I genuinely wonder if they will remain there with how popular, other sports are becoming here
NFL
in Canada.
For sure, recently.
Yeah, right. Like, it's, you're not even number four in the United States any longer. Like, you might have an odd market here, but the fact that you're not number four is scary there. Up here in Canada, you can bank on number one for all you would like, but you can't, you need to, like, generate that engagement. But
yeah, if you're not moving forwards, like, if you're standing still, you're moving backwards. That's a more eloquent way of saying that, but my brain is fried. Sorry.
Yeah. So I had not heard that, but thanks, Talkit, for calling out Petey. I'm sure that will play well.
Yeah, that's how you get Petey to sign a new deal, is demote him and then badmouth him.
Maybe Talkit's playing the long game and trying to, you know, cool Petey down so that the, you know, final value of his contract isn't too significant. Maybe that's it. It's five-dimensional chess. Now, can I talk about Columbus?
You can.
Okay. So Columbus rolls in town. Columbus, not so good. As we had discussed last week, we said this was a six-point week. Unfortunately, the Blues game made that impossible, but I think we would have been very disappointed if the Vancouver Canucks didn't walk away with two against the Blue Jackets. The first period, they were unbelievable. Like, they were the better team on the ice. Mm-hmm. The fact that they had gone into the intermission 0-0, honest, is a travesty. I think saying better team does them a disservice. It was as if they were the only team on the ice.
Yes, 100%. That's, like, really feels like an accurate way of saying it. Like, it was just, like, so exciting, such, like, good hockey, but no goals.
Mm-hmm. Now, Merzlikins, who was in net, he had, in the previous win over the Vancouver Canucks, made a comment about sort of his team's play and the organization. So, you know, you could probably imagine equally hot coming into Vancouver, wanting to back up the conversation. And just to make it clear, he wasn't saying anything about Vancouver post-game, but he was putting himself in a position that would get attention and potentially be thrown on a bulletin board. He did everything that he needed to do to keep his team in it. Unfortunately, the Vancouver Canucks, as very accommodating hosts, decided that this weekend would be a good time to give up another shorthanded goal, something they haven't given up too many of. And in doing so, seemed to give the Columbus Blue Jackets life.
The second period was horrible,
if you're a Canucks fan.
Yeah, for sure. I think they said Columbus was the last team to score in the league to score a shorthanded goal this year.
Where I didn't catch that, but hey, Vancouver, very accommodating hosts. I mean, there's a reason why a lot of Wayne Gretzky's records have been set in Vancouver, and Vancouver goes out of their way to help a team out. But that is it, Texier.
Yeah.
Texier, okay, gets a shorthanded goal. Bad giveaway by the Vancouver Canucks. Fine, still on the power play. amounts to absolutely nothing. Corrali scores only a minute and a half-ish later. Again, Blue Jackets are now suddenly getting life. So thank goodness for Brock Besser, who late in the second period gets the Canucks on the board. Okay, that's going to settle things down, right? No, because Vancouver proceeded to give up goals 3 and 4 in approximately a minute.
Yeah.
Or in a total of 3 minutes after the Besser goal.
Even though this is the second time Canucks have played Blue Jackets in a couple of weeks, this is how I discovered that Jake Bean now plays in Columbus.
He scores goals?
Yeah, well, that's exactly how I found out. Rude awakening.
Yeah. So the Vancouver Canucks sport the Jackets a 4-1 lead going into the third period. Shots on goal, completely one-sided in the Blue Jackets' favor. Now, that's not because the Blue Jackets had a whole lot of time on power play. In fact, the Vancouver Canucks, they did have a couple of penalties, but equally the Blue Jackets returned the favor. So you'd think that, you know, shots should be pretty even there. But no, the Columbus Blue Jackets just had all the momentum. So going into the third period, things didn't look well. And it was at that point that I think a lot of people started talking about, wow, man, it's going to be nice to have the All-Star break here. The team can rest. They can recover, rejuvenate. Not the way you want to go into the break, but hey, you refocus. I had commented on Threads how, you know, the Vancouver Canucks have so many players going to the All-Star game that is it wrong of me to consider that it would be nice for them to skip it so they too can earn the beach time?
Yeah, I did see Jay Pat's tweet something about like the Canucks' minds already being in warmer climates. I'm like, half the team's going to Toronto. Like, that's not warmer climate.
Not that warm at all. But whatever happened in the dressing room during that second intermission definitely inspired Vancouver to come out and change the way the game was being played. So late in the second period, Columbus takes a penalty. Severson sends the sin bin. And helping make them pay is Petey on the power play. So having get called out by his coach, Petey decides to go and show him who the better player happens to be. Gets the Vancouver Canucks within 2. Now, Columbus, whether it's right or wrong, finds themselves in penalty trouble. They take another penalty, Voronikov, or hooking. And again, this is not because Columbus was being focused on by the officials. The Vancouver Canucks came out and played some inspired hockey the entire third period. Like absolutely were skating around. I think this was the penalty that Garland was able to draw. He had an aggressive forecheck.
Pretty well.
Takes the puck away. Again, off to the sin bin you go. Besser's like, thank you. Scores another. His second of the game. This is 3:24 into the third. So the Canucks are now within 1. Like, you can feel it.
Yeah.
And, it would probably be smart. The Vancouver Canucks have 2 power play markers against you that you try not to do anything to draw the officials' attention. But Boonjohner decided that wasn't the case, proceeds to get himself 2 minutes for slashing, and Brock Besser scores himself his 3rd for a hat trick, tying it up 4-4, not even midway through the third. And the Vancouver Canucks continued to put foot on the gas.
I mean, many more hats for that one.
More than 2.
More than 2. Also, yes, his 30th goal. So that is his highest goal tally ever.
And season's not over.
Mm-hmm.
So you'd think at this point, the Vancouver Canucks, they've got this one in the bag. Like, it's only a matter of time they'll score that go-ahead goal and, go into the break, excited. I mean, it was a nutty game all way around, no matter how you look at it. But something that happened in a third period has me confused, Anna. So I can't remember who it was that Myers went into the boards with, but they're
Curly, they're racing, I think.
Yeah. Well, they're racing for a puck in the Canucks' end. They go into the boards hard. Now, Myers, he he spins, he turns, and his arm is high. And with Myers, when his arm is high, it's got the potential of, you know, knocking a fan out over the glass. Like, this is possible. clips the Blue Jacket player. Cole, I think it was, comes in and finishes a check. Not too egregious, but when you look at the replay, there was some thought like, oh, he got him in the numbers. He's being sent to the penalty box. Like, the referees had their arm up right away. And so the broadcast is looking at this. They're like, okay, so Cole's going to the box for interference, or is it Myers for the elbow? Because, like, the replay shows the elbow.
Yeah.
You didn't see it in the flow of the game.
Yeah, and then when the referees went to discuss...
Well, see, this is the thing, is they had called a penalty, but they hadn't announced that it was a major. Then they say it was a major penalty. Cole's in the box, so they're assessing a major, potential major for interference to Cole.
Which was, like, from almost everyone's perspective, seemed crazy. Like, I can see how it's a penalty, but...
Yeah, significantly harsh.
Major.
But... they're talking about, like, okay, you look at it, like, he got him in the numbers. Yeah, he went down vulnerable, but, like, we've seen much worse, hits in the game go punished for less or unpunished at all. Then there was some thought that maybe the referees thought that it wasn't so much the check in the back in so much as the impact of the player who was somewhat prone on the ice. So the referees, they go and they do the review. During that review, they realize that, oh, well, Ian Cole... what he did, not bad. Not bad at all. But look at that elbow. I didn't see that before. And in, as you write, the Uno reverse call on Tyler Myers, Cole is sent to the Canucks bench and Tyler Myers is thrown out of the game for a 5-minute major for elbowing. So Myers went from receiving no penalty whatsoever and then as part of a review for an entirely different call on an entirely different player, was found to be the one who was the offender to be ejected.
Yeah. You got 10-minute major.
Well, had they not called the interference penalty on Cole, it's not like Toronto or the, you know, situation room or whomever in the building could call down the referees and say, oh, you got to throw him out for elbowing. Like, in soccer, there's the VAR.
So that could happen.
Yeah, VAR has
the... If you miss an incident completely, they can call you off on that.
Yeah, I mean, but there's a variety of different situations that can happen in. It's not for everything. Like, it.
Yeah.
Really what it comes down to is an ejection in soccer, red card. That is a VAR thing. So in hockey, they don't have that. They only have the referees in the ice who can make sure they got the call right if they're going to throw someone out. But it was confusing. Like, you could tell that, you know, broadcast was like, how is this possible? Like, we've been told, like, here, what can be done on review. This isn't one of them. I still haven't heard an explanation about this.
Yeah. So, like,
the league come out and say, hey, here's why this happened and here's where it's allowed?
Yeah. I mean, that's what they... us, right? Like, I've read that, like, Daniel Wagner tweeted out the rule, which refers to the review system, and, like, after you review a major, you can, like, either increase the, like, severity of the punishment, reduce it, or, like, rescind it. Mm-hmm. You cannot change the penalty
So this is the thing. If they had called a penalty against Myers to the elbow right away, I have actually no issue if he gets thrown out. Yeah, some might say it's soft, he didn't intend, but I'm sorry. That elbow was square in the schnoz, right? Like, it was an elbow.
But, did you hear what was said on the broadcast after the game? Like, Ron and Elliot were talking about it. Elliot said, oh, yeah, I heard from the league, and the gist was get the call right. That's the main thing. So read between the lines. That means, no, it's not legal what the refs did, but they're backing their refs. That's what I'm taking from that comment.
Yeah, it was messy. I mean, in fact, the NHL is probably happy that the team who had the 5-minute major to kill off was the superior team on the ice during that 5 minutes. Vancouver during that major, it was as if they had felt aggrieved that this had even happened. And they had the majority of the goal scoring opportunities during the 5 minutes. This is a team who's down a man in a game where they've not looked all that good until more recently, giving, you know, having the team that they're playing being given an opportunity to score one or more. And Vancouver was the better team. Like, I think Columbus may have gotten one scoring opportunity.
Yeah.
In 5 minutes. Whereas Vancouver, I can remember three at least.
Yeah. And I think Canucks were closer to scoring than,
Regardless, they kill the penalty. Yeah. The barn is hopping. Takes us into overtime. And overtime was the point as to which you could tell the Vancouver Canucks were walking away with 2 points. It didn't matter what they needed to do. Quinn Hughes was going to play the entire overtime period if he was given the opportunity. Like he played the first 2 minutes. He went off for 15 seconds, and then he came back on the ice.
Yeah, unreal.
And happened to get the second assist on the Petey goal.
I mean, it was a goal. It went in the back of the net.
Yeah, it wasn't a kicking motion. It was, you know, it was as if, you know, Besser saw Petey skate and banked it in. But regardless, doesn't matter what happens on the score sheet as long as they count.
Yep. And they did. So, there we go. Comeback complete.
Yeah, it was a meta game. I was shouting. I scared my dog. I scared my cat. My wife had to come into the living room to check on me. Like, that third period was all sorts of crazy. I was also
shouting. Like, it was, there was something in the air for sure. The, like, rain was crazy yesterday. The Giants, who were not playing at home, but another Vancouver team came back from 6-5-1 down to win 7-6 in overtime earlier that day. Technically, the baby Canucks were also, I think, 1-0 down, and then they won it in overtime. Sidebar, England cricket team and the West Indies cricket team came back into the game. Improbable comebacks also, and won overnight. So there was something in the air last night, and yeah, it felt like a night of sports magic, honestly. I was very excited. Like, it got me hyped. I was like, I'm ready for playoffs now.
The game was definitely an interesting one. And almost, if you were to think how the Vancouver Canucks have played over the course of the season, like, there have been moments of, you know, gloriousness followed by moments of sure pandemonium to, oh my goodness, is this the team of old, to, no, I spoke too early, don't count them out, this team is going to win every game that they can. Like, It was phenomenal. But that said, the Vancouver Canucks do have themselves in a phenomenal position going into the All-Star break. Very few teams can claim to be first in the division. Only four of them. But then when you look at like the overall standings in the West, guess who's at the top, Anna?
Guess who's top of the league?
It doesn't matter until you win the cup.
It doesn't. And looking down, well, I mean, looking across, because they have the same number of points, but Boston Bruins, it feels good. It's funny, like, the Canucks and the Bruins have literally just been swapping their first place in the league for the last couple weeks now.
But in fairness to the Bruins, which it pains me to say, here's a team who, again, has yet to have double-digit losses. Like, we were talking about this last season, where going into this point, they hadn't broken double-digit losses yet. They're doing it again.
Yeah. I mean, we can only hope that we get a repeat of last year's dominant in the regular season, flopping in the playoffs.
Yeah. Although, I mean, the Bruins do have more loser points than the Vancouver Canucks have.
And that's time for the 3-2-1 points, but
yeah, I'm all for it. I'm all for it. But, five Canucks going off to Toronto, the rest getting to go to the beach. Tockett's only ask is they continue to work out while they're on the beach.
You think they're going to Bali?
You know what? I would, if Petey was there, we'd see it on Instagram. But he's going to be in Toronto, so don't know.
Yeah.
We'll never know.
I think the Canucks are, like, permanently banned from going to Bali ever.
Just do some parasailing. Blindfolded.
ski season still going.
Yeah. Well, not here because the freezing level is above the height of the coastal mountains and it's just raining on them right now. Not to rain on your parade, but we're going to take ourselves a short break. As I mentioned off the top of the show, we are going to be talking about a topic that pertains to sexual assault. And as a result, I can understand how that type of content may impact some. And so please take this as a reminder that the F word is coming up. If it is not something that you have the ability to listen to and have us discuss, we will see you again next week. But for those who are sticking around, we'll be right back. This is the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris.
He liked to say the F word.
Well, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
He's going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you a f***ing explanation about it. I can't.
You f*** out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
A couple weeks back, word came out that the London Police Department had completed their investigation and had forwarded a recommendation to Crown Counsel as to the potential of charges. There wasn't actual charges filed. And then we started to see players across the NHL and one in Europe suddenly been granted leaves of absence now. The players themselves getting these leaves of absence on their own wouldn't be peculiar, except for the sort of thread that connected them all together. And the presumption was that maybe there's something more that was about to come to light. Last week, the Globe and Mail reported that the London police had requested that a number of people turn themselves in as it pertained to sexual assault that happened back in 2018. And, well, these individuals have yet to officially, or let me rephrase that, have yet to turn themselves all in.
Yes. One player.
The name of one player has been officially announced by his lawyer, and that's Alex Formanton, has turned himself into the London police. And according to his lawyer, Alex will vigorously defend his innocence and ask that people not rush to judgment without hearing all of the evidence. I am hesitant to name the other four simply because, one, nothing official has come out. And there are legal implications if we were to go in and say something that is not true, but very easily Google and you can connect whatever dots you may wish to connect.
Yeah. And just say like, yeah, we're, that's not necessarily something we're interested in talking about. Like, that's not the main point of this is, yeah, I feel like the identity of the players is just, like, one part of this really just horrific story.
It is. And that's, yeah, please, you know, take what I'm saying simply as me as a podcaster covering our podcast. I would love to be in a position to go in and tell you everything that's out there, but we also have to approach this delicately from a legal standpoint. One of the things, though, that really pains me to see, Anna, and something I wanted to ask you about, is that there are many who seem to suggest that the complainants in this particular situation waited to quote-unquote press charges. And I find that repulsive for two reasons. One, time does not make this any better, the situation. But yeah. Two, you as an individual, me as an individual, we have no ability to press charges. It is ultimately up to Crown Counsel to press charges based on an investigation by a police force, in this particular case, the London Police Department. And what's very important to know, if you seem to think, and again, you as a listener, maybe you're like, well, why did it take so long? This came down to law enforcement. The complainant went to the police immediately. And here we are, 6 years later.
Yeah. And honestly, like, I have nothing but just the most deepest, most profound, like, respect and admiration for the complainant here, because think about what we have discovered in the last few years about Hockey Canada, the slush funds, the cover-ups, and how reprehensibly they have behaved when called to account by Parliament. None of that would have been uncovered if it wasn't for the story that came out regarding the 2018 World Junior Team.
Mm-hmm. The scary part about this is just that, is that it is quite likely none of this happens had it not been for investigative reporting.
Yeah.
And then in turn, the repulsive nature as to the offense and how we as a general public, upon becoming aware of it, exerted what I could best describe as social pressure on a law enforcement agency to dig deeper. Mm. And I'm not going to claim that they did not dig, but I think it's very apparent that our legal system is not capable or does not possess the tools necessary of dealing with sexual assault appropriately.
Yeah. And that's true of like law enforcement all over the world. But yeah, it's definitely true that for various reasons, and there's just like the amount of social pressure. I don't know if anyone has read the book Bear Town, which is about sexual assault in a hockey town in Sweden. Just like that alone is a really good microcosm of hockey and society, really. And that takes place in Sweden, but really could be Canada. And this is the World Junior Team. Like, that's such a huge deal. These are, like, supposed to be, like, the national heroes in a way. Like, this is the whole country is watching this tournament over Christmas. It was a home World Juniors. Just, like, the amount of power that those players wield. And, like, that kind of goes for, you know, what happened that night. The pressure they exerted on the complainant. The threats they made. But also just in general, right? Like, the amount of power that hockey players have over law enforcement, in a way. Mm-hmm. Like, it's such a huge deal for any hockey player to be accused of this. You have to get it right 100% because you're not going to get a second. Like, you can't be, it has to be completely perfect in every way, the way you investigate this. So it's a huge amount of pressure on anyone, but it's like, yeah, it's just so important that, like, this isn't dropped, you know, this issue, like, specifically this case, but the issue in general, the pressure on Hockey Canada, like, I know a lot of organizations are pulling away from Hockey Canada right now, and honestly, I was kind of disgusted to see the way that Elliot Friedman talked about it on, like, he has a huge amount of influence too, right? And he talked about it like kids were being put in the crossfire of politics, like, by these organizations pulling away from Hockey Canada, when really these kids are, like, not being protected.
Sorry, when he referring to kids, I'm not going to suggest I got it right. I interpreted, and I'm not suggesting he's right actually in saying it, that he was talking about kids who play hockey.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Okay. Like, sort of in the general sense in Hockey Canada. To me, I don't fault the organizations for doing that. I fault Hockey Canada for having such a
exactly.
boring policies.
To me, that's where, exactly where the blame should be. And he seemed to not, he'd be putting the blame yeah. on the organizations as if Hockey Canada was the victim
yeah,
of that. Yeah.
I mean, the fallout is great. Like, this impacts potentially the accessibility of the game to those who might otherwise not be able to get to it because of sponsorship money not being present. But why did this occur? Because you had an organization who was much more interested in covering up the issue and being demonstratively obtuse when it came to the investigation.
Like, yeah, they were just the disregard with which they treated like MPs' questions during the parliamentary committees was just appalling, I thought. Just like as if they had been, I don't even know, but like, I just don't understand like how they thought. It was so brazen, I just thought it was awful. Like, they're literally using registration money to pay out like sexual assault victims. Like,
yeah, the thing about this that also infuriates me, and this is more about Hockey Canada and how they approach it, is there's another situation that's still being dealt with from even years prior in Halifax, 2002-2003, and Hockey Canada heard a rumor that something may have happened, so they hired a third party investigator, and that third party investigator apparently uncovered nothing. Why would you not inform the police? Like, is it that you don't want to inform the police for fear that something's found and you're determined to be like, it's the, you and I as podcasters, we're saying things delicately because words do matter. But I can assure you, if you or I were to have witnessed something or heard a rumor that significant, we would, one, know we're not equipped to deal with it, and two, we would
right.
forward that to those who should be equipped in regards to law enforcement. Hockey Canada is a much bigger organization, I feel, has a much larger responsibility, one of which is, quite frankly, a moral one to do so.
Yeah, and like you said, what you're saying about rumors, and it's something I've discussed, I think, quite a lot, maybe on and off the podcast, but I know a lot of people will be saying, like, you know, innocent until proven guilty. I mean, and we've said before, like, that's a legal standard. It's not a social one. And literally, if you are a woman in the world, you have to react to if your friends are telling you, like, or anyone is telling you that someone is dangerous. A man is dangerous, you listen to that, and that's, like, how you are protected. You don't mm-hmm. wait to say, well, like, well, maybe he's a good guy, actually, and you just got it wrong. Like, literally, women die if they do that. So, mm-hmm. like, you just believe women. That's all it comes down to.
Yeah, the important part of that is believe, right? Like, yes, the legal system needs to ensure that it gets it right. The legal construct of, you know, innocence until proven guilty, I think, is an important one, and everyone should possess that right. But just because you are innocent until proven guilty doesn't mean you're not guilty. It just means you're innocent. And it is upon the Crown, which, for those of you who are not Canadian or part of the Commonwealth, that is essentially the government, the justice system,
yeah.
the prosecution, they are required to prove beyond reasonable doubt. And they don't need anyone else's, or let me phrase this, someone who is presumed innocent does not need the help of others to remain innocent outside of the legal requirement to tell the truth if you were called upon to do so within the court, because the burden to prove beyond reasonable doubt is so significant that our legal system is structured in such a way that something could have happened based on a balance of probabilities, but mm-hmm. that person remains, quote unquote, not guilty as proven by court of law. Like if it's a he said or she said, people are like, oh, well, you're just choosing to believe one or the other. Well, I choose to believe the victim, but I get our legal system needs more than a balance of probabilities.
Yeah. And that's, yeah. And going back to what we said about the legal system, like the burden of proof does not discount responding sensitively and supportively to reports of sexual assault. And, yeah, there's still a way forward in that justice system that, yeah supports victims, and it's not currently the way it works.
The statistics also support the fact that the number of false claims, where they're demonstrably proven false, is significantly small.
It's negligible.
Statistics don't support the, maybe it's a lie.
Yeah, and the statistics do support the fact that sexual assault is just so underreported.
Well, again, I'm not asking you directly, but if you were to be a victim of an assault, would you want to go through the entire process where you are essentially laid bare and asked questions in front of a court?
I know.
That question you when all you happened to be was, for lack of a better way to describe it, caught in an extremely wrong place at the wrong time.
Yeah.
Through no fault of your own. And yet now you are going to be re-victimized by a system that, again, is not equipped to deal with it.
Yeah. And I will say, I'm not going to speak too deeply on my personal experience or anything. I'm just going to say that, to all men out there, every woman you know, almost every woman you know, I would say 99.9% of women have a story. Mm-hmm. It might not be a story of sexual assault, but it's a story where something bad happened. So it's just so prevalent.
I think that should be shocking. If it isn't, the only way it wouldn't be is you're like, yeah, I've heard it so many times. I'm no longer shocked by it. But that's because it's, in my mind, the truth, which again is a problem. If it's that true, why are we doing very little to change it? Speaking as a man, I'm disappointed in myself that I have not done more to change that. I don't know what more I can do, but I'm sure there is more that I can do.
Well, yeah. And the thing is, it does start from having conversations with your friends. It's calling out a bad comment that your friend makes. I did see a video, I forget who tweeted it, I'm sorry, but I did retweet it, so you can go to my timeline. And it's just, the grossness of hockey culture. It's literal children, children hockey players. These are 14, 15-year-olds that are being asked about, quote-unquote, women on their, girls on their roster for social media, and it's that's disgusting. You know that, right? And every time you put out, you're dehumanizing women, and you're ingraining that into teenagers.
And anyway, in doing so, normalizing it.
Totally.
Yeah. Again, reinforcement that hockey still kind of sucks.
It do. Yeah.
So, Anna, we've reached that point of the show where we'd like to share final words of wisdom. I have to call out a note that you put in the rundown where you had a good thought to end on, but not sure if you'd remember it by the time the episode rolled around. Have you remembered it?
So, I haven't.
Okay.
But I did think of something else to say, because I didn't say this when we were talking about the Pia Suter hat trick, and I just wanted to share it with people in case they hadn't seen it or missed it on the broadcast, but how the just quirk of fate about how his only other NHL hat trick was also on January 24th.
Oh.
And that happens to be his number.
We won't know if the Canucks play next season on January 24th, but, you know.
If they do, give Suda that ice time.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, and also, we didn't mention it at the top of the show, because I think it happened like Monday as our episode came out, but poor baby Carson Soucy is injured again. So
back on the IR. Yeah.
Thoughts and prayers to the beautiful Carson Soucy.
Is he beautiful?
He's beautiful.
Okay. I will take your word for it. Final words of wisdom for me. Speak up. That's quite literally it. You see something, you hear something, say something, speak up. Be the impetus of change. And you'd be surprised that the more you normalize being the impetus of change, that others will embrace and follow. It's a whole lot easier to create that movement. We are a lowly Canucks podcast, and we're able to do it. So I think, you know, you as maybe a listener and others might have it in you too. So we are here at the end of our regular show. We'll be back again next week to talk about the All-Star Game, the draft, the whole event in Toronto.
Whether Rick Tocchet yells at any of his players that he's coaching at the All-Star Game.
So we know that the Hughes brothers are captains in regards to like the skills competition. Coach? Well, like if I understand correctly, the players are still going to be playing within the context of their division under the coach, or is it based on the four captains that they've chosen?
No, I think they just get to, because they would just get assigned. So no, they just, the captains get to draft whoever they want.
Okay, so do the captains get to draft their coach?
I don't think so. I do think the coaches will be assigned. And okay, they may be assigned by division. I don't know.
Okay, what division is Team Hughes on?
That's true.
Because they're co-captains as well. Like, it's not like a captain. I know, because
brothers have
alternate
to share everything. Paul Quinn can't get one thing to himself. He was like, I get a team to myself, but... Like, I guess, yeah, Luke has to share with his brother, New Jersey Devils, with his brother Jack, and Quinn now has to share the All-Star captaincy.
Yeah, anyhow, it's an interesting...
Yeah, I'm not sure how the coaches work. We'll see.
Well, but like the other thing is you have the Oilers, the Avs, the Maple Leafs, right? So you've got this divisional representation, and then you've got the Hughes brothers.
Well, yeah, and the Oilers are in our division, so I don't know.
No, but this is the thing. Yeah. So, like, is Quinn Hughes, has he been traded to the East? Like, is this something that we don't know? Like, the NHL is really
confused the issue. Don't even speak those words.
Okay. Well, I mean, he's not going anywhere. One, he's our captain, and two, someone needs to play with Bedard when he becomes a Vancouver Canuck. If you are so inspired to support our show, you can do so by telling your friends about it. You can obviously subscribe, drop reviews and all that. But if you have a few bucks that you'd like to throw our way, you can do so by going to support.c4podcast.com, which will forward you with Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And you can, as I say, we'll do a one-off donation, or you could commit monthly or annually to help us in turn, pay for the podcast, hosting, the actual software we use to record, all of that carries with it a cost, and everything that you provide us goes directly into that. Those of you who do subscribe on a recurring basis also get one of the exclusive C4 podcast stickers, of which Anna has a buttload of.
I do have a buttload.
Well. I have even more. That's how many we have. So there are stickers
asset
to go
poor,
around.
Sticker rich.
Yeah, exactly. That is totally it. Poor cap management on our part. You can find us on Twitter at the C4 Podcast and on Threads at the Real C4 Podcast. So on behalf of Anna, A4603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, signing off this episode with We Out.